What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of the Friday Sessions with the Three Amigos and myself. This one got off to a bit of a slow start, but if you get through the first 20 minutes of this, and you can skip to it if you want to, it became a very unique pod for us. It got very, very personal, and we spent a good deal of time talking about things that we don't normally talk about on this pod that's very, very personal in our own lives and journeys as fathers, people, entrepreneurs, and got very, very raw at certain points. I'm not going to say too much more. I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy this one. If you do like it, you know, drop us a comment. Let us know what you think. But I promise you, if you stick around right to the very end, there's just value all the way to the very, very end of this one. For all of you out there that are struggling in any way, wanting to up-level your life, feel like you are capable of so much more, but you're just not getting there. There's so many, I think, answers in here, but not the kinds of answers that you would normally hear from people who are doing a podcast on how to be successful and improve your life. It's a very raw, honest discussion. So with that said, hope you enjoy it. See you on the flip side. So guys, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but if you haven't, have any of you guys seen the F1 movie that's come out?
No.
Yeah, I went and saw it 2 days ago.
How epic was it? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I liked it. I think I ruined it a little bit for myself because I watch like every week. I watch practice one, practice two, practice three. I kind of get what's possible and what's not. I probably wasn't able to suspend belief as much as I was in Top Gun. But yeah, it was sensational. It was pretty good.
So yeah, it's a Hollywood take. It's not a Netflix take on it. Series.
No, it's an actual movie.
Think Top Gun.
Yeah. Top Gun, but in F1 race cars, produced by Apple. It was a rip snort. I thought it was a great, great film.
Brad Pitt starring.
Man, 60. He's 61. He's got to be like the fucking best looking, most put together 61-year-old I've ever seen. Jesus.
Mate, if you had $400 or $500 million, I reckon you look a bit better as well.
Well, guys, it is end of financial year. Why don't we do a bit of a roundup for the end of the financial year? How was your year in review? Like on the whole, how would you say your year has been? Eric, I know you got a few stats and a few things going on. Why don't you kick it off? How are you feeling, mate?
I think the year was okay. I don't think it was a standout year by any means in regards to business, retail side of things. You know, the online businesses have ticked over, but you're not breaking any records, I don't think, anyone in retail. And if you are, I'd love to hear your stories and what you're doing and seeing what we're doing wrong. In the property side of things, I think it's done fairly well. Obviously, properties up across the board, across Australia. Some regional areas are a lot higher than others. You know, Perth has had a massive increase as, you know, one of the capital cities. Brisbane has done all right as well. And obviously, Gold Coast being a regional city, and that's where I'm heavily invested in, has also done half decent. I'm not big in the ASX, but from what I've read, the ASX is up as well. And bank stocks are definitely up. I don't own any bank stocks, but, you know, I wish I did over the last 12 months because they are definitely up by quite a bit. But I think 2024 has been an interesting year because we've, you know, even with you guys, you know, Unemployable, we've kind of had our head down, you know, building up the Unemployable business. We launched Unemployable Property this year as well. And we've really had a good mix of podcasts, obviously. You know, we were just doing the Friday pod before and the Tuesday pod. And now we've got Bitcoin pods, we've got property pods. We've introduced, obviously, some political podcasts, which have done quite well. So I think this year for me has been a lot of testing and measuring, and it's been interesting. It's been an interesting year. I think 2025 will be a better year in regards to, especially for online and retail. I think buyer sentiment will start creeping back in a little bit. Investors are coming back into the market, especially into the real estate space. And also with interest rates coming down, there's usually quite some time of a lag for people to actually start understanding the savings from some of these interest rate reductions. It'll be interesting to see what they do in July. That's not too far away from us. But yeah, that's kind of my take.
Yeah. I want to acknowledge any small business owner that survived the last financial year. It was a very flat year, and surviving in small business is hard at the best of times. But when the economy is under pressure and we've had an election, which always puts a spanner in the works. And so if you're a small business owner listening to this, respect, if you survived and if you thrived, you've done really, really well. Any comments you guys want to add, Mark or James, to your respective financial years? And maybe just quickly what you might think is this year. What are you picking for this financial year coming up?
Are we referring to end of FY24 or 25?
Yeah. For international listeners in Australia, our financial year starts on July 1st and finishes June 30. So we just finished our financial year. So I'm talking about financial year that just closed and the financial year that's coming. What are your thoughts on the past and the next year coming?
I'm still doing my tax returns from FY 2024, so I'm a little bit behind. But I can tell you anecdotally that 2024 was a rougher year for us. I sold a bunch of property, and that got me through. But you know, business we were running at a break even, maybe at a loss throughout that whole 18 month period. 2025, which is the year that just closed, we're from January this year, we've got the business back on track where we're operating at above 20-25% gross margin. And the trading has been going really, really good. So I'm starting to get a little bit concerned in relation to the taxation around that, because by not holding that and making sales, it's going to have a lot of tax come due. I think the one takeaway that I would probably provide is that with relation to e-commerce, because a lot of people still ask me about e-commerce, is everything is getting much more saturated and much more difficult, whether it be Facebook ads, whether it be TikTok shop, whether it be Amazon. If you don't kind of have a foothold within the market, it's very, very hard to start something from a standing start at the moment, I'm finding. That would be my takeaway. And 2025, the year coming, I'm looking forward to structuring my investments in a more tax effective way. And maybe not so much buying and selling and a little bit more hodling.
Yeah, I might just jump in quickly, James, before I get your take on that. I just want to raise one issue that we talked about last Friday, which was Eric mentioned that, you know, that it's slated that there's a change coming in capital gains tax, and distribution tax out of family trusts, that the minimum is going to be 30% flat tax minimum for all distributions, which sort of knocked out this ability for you to spread the income across a multiple of family members or perhaps somebody who's got tax losses that you could absorb. That's actually slated for discussion, but it's not actually in legislation. We're all of the opinion, given the current climate, that it's coming. So I just wanted to clarify that. And thanks for the people in the community that pointed that out. And the other thing I wanted to mention, that when we ourselves dove back in to have a look after a few of you raised it, we also noticed that they have slated to reduce the capital gains tax protection from 50% down to 25%. So that, again, it's not in yet, but they are proposing it, meaning that in the past, if you held an asset, what Mark's talking about here is because he's trading equities, he'll buy an equity one week and then sell it the next, or an option, and create a profit. He has to pay tax on the full capital gain because he's not got any capital gains tax exemption, which means if you in Australia, if you hold an asset for longer than 12 months, 50% of the growth, you don't have to pay tax on, and you pay tax on the other 50% of the growth. The Labor government at the moment is proposing that they reduce that down, say only 25% of the growth is tax-free and the other 75% is tax. So this is a big change as well, if it comes in. And given the majority that the Australian people gave the Labor government, there's a very good chance that this will pass as well. So these are two really big tax reforms that are going to make it even harder for the average person who's trying to create wealth to actually achieve that. James,
Adam,
what about you?
Oh, sorry, Mark. Yeah, you go first, James, and then I think we'll loop back to this.
You're halfway there, so tee off there. Go, you're up.
You got no. All right, I'll go because you're talking. The 2020, that last financial year was, it was interesting. Again, it was like the sentiment still is around from what you guys just said there before. And also I had a business that we decided to cease operations with. It was, you know, very top heavy with staff, and with all these new laws coming in and legislation coming in, we decided it wasn't worth the juice, wasn't worth the squeeze, because it was going to be a staff reliant business. So we're down tools with that and retooled and launched another business that's going to be almost zero full-time or internal staff. So that's just coming out of the gates now. But, yeah, it was a pretty flat year from that perspective. But property, obviously, we've sort of mentioned a few times in the pod, with some property in the pipeline. And I think the next couple of years, especially in southeast Queensland, everything we're reading will be fairly buoyant in certain pockets. So I'm fairly bullish on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2024 was 25 year. Wasn't the best one I've ever had, that's for sure.
And I wanted to get those takes, guys, because I know a lot of you out there to listen to the pod are small business owners. And I wanted you to hear it. Eric, for those of you who don't know our backgrounds, Eric's got quite a large e-commerce business, the largest motocross online store in Australia, about 170 staff or something like that. So big business. And not a hugely big year of growth. The same for me. I had an e-com business, which I just sold, but it was flat. So I just wanted you all to just then know, hey, it's okay if you didn't grow much in the last year, surviving or minor growth. We grew, I think, 15% year on year. But given that we're an early stage business, that's fairly conservative growth for a small business that's only a few years into the journey, as opposed to Eric, who's 17 years into that journey of MX Store. So take heart, guys, if you're out there and it has been flat. It's been flat for all of us as well, and it's all good. I want to just throw some stats at you, moving on from the financial year roundup. Just it was a bit of fun because we've got Freedom Summon coming up. If you haven't registered yet, first of all, those who have registered, thank you for doing so. We've raised $120,000 now for the John Fawcett Foundation in a week, which has been fantastic. But one of our speakers is the lady from Dubai, and I had a call with her yesterday. And just preparing for her speech and her talk at this summit, where she's going to be teaching us about the Dubai real estate market and what's happening there. But she shared some stats with me that just blew my mind. I just thought I'd share some of these with you. In the last, and we're not going to spend long on this at all today, but in the last year, their real estate market in Dubai, they did 226,000 transactions valued at $761 billion, which is a 36% year-on-year increase. And in the first quarter of 2025, they did 58,000 transactions or nearly $200 billion in transactions in Dubai, which I find that absolutely stunning when you're looking at a city of about 3 and a bit million people. Just shows you, like, not all parts of the world are sleepy right now. They're absolutely booming. And it's now the number one most trafficked airport in the world, with some 90 million travelers a year going through Dubai International and into the city, which is just bonkers. As she also shared with me, you know, most listeners have probably seen the Palm Jumeirah, you know, the Palm development started 14 years ago. And with the most recent sales on the Palm, the compound annual growth rate of property on the Palm has been 160% per year for 14 years. Think about that in real estate. It's out of control.
I think something just gave Bitcoin a run for its money in the past 10 years, if you were taking it that way.
Exactly, yeah. And talk about limited supply.
And you can lever into it. And, when I say lever, it's interest-free. And over there, there's no interest component. So
it just shows money, you know, flooding into these places. It's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. But anyway, if you want to learn more about that and hear from Natalie directly, she's going to be joining us on the Freedom Summit talking about – she's a Kiwi – she's going to be talking about how it works there, the real estate market works there, and it's pretty interesting stuff. Moving on from that, Mark, let's throw to you because we missed this last week, and I find it absolutely fascinating how you're using ChatGPT to sort of, personally develop as a human being. And one thing I love about you is because you're a trader, you live and die by being right or wrong, right? Like in very, very real terms. Maybe you could just riff for a minute on your personal spiritual journey of becoming a trader, because you've made some pretty bold statements in some of your social media posts about how it's taught you more about life and yourself than even having a kid, which is a huge statement. Maybe just frame it up for us and then talk to us about some of the experiences you've had with ChatGPT or the equivalent, Grok or whatever you're using, and how it's making you better, because everybody listening to this can grow from this.
Yeah, so you know, I've listened to that. I've listened to my voice back when I make that statement that trading or investing teaches me more about being introspective and more about myself than what my wife and kid do. And it even sounds weird to me when I hear it, but the way that I explain it is, sometimes you're in a relationship with another human being, or you have a child, and slowly, it's like you're not always at your best. You're not always having your best day and your best game. And because your family love you, because your partner loves you, or because your child loves you, you get away with not putting those deposits in the bank each and every day. And sometimes you get away with it longer than what you should, right? Because the people that love you sparingly give you that hard feedback about, hey, you're not being very present at the moment. And when they do, it hits very hard, right? And you want to make changes and you want to adjust your behavior in order to make the people that you love most happy, right? But sometimes that feedback will take 6 to 12 months, or sometimes it never comes, right? And you get served with hey, I don't want to be with you anymore, or whatever. But with trading, it's instant. If you make a bad decision in trading, you get feedback on that in real time. You either make money or you lose money. And so I think the mechanism at play with being more introspective and learning about myself during trading is I'm getting instant feedback. Like, I'm waking up each and every day, each and every morning, going to bed, and I'm being judged against my decisions. And, you know, especially I'm a novice trader early in my career. I'm only like 5 years into my investing journey. And I realize that a lot of the decisions that I make are not always, they're not always coming from a place of logic. They're probably more often than not coming from an emotional place than a place of logic. And so that's not a good recipe, right? A trader or an investor who's making decisions purely based on emotion, or not even purely based on emotion, but, you know, even 60-40 based on emotion, is probably over the long run going to get hurt, because the market doesn't give a shit about your emotions, right?
Did you figure that out by losing trades, or how did you come to the conclusion? Because most people are not aware or would never admit that they're making decisions emotionally. How did you come to that conclusion?
Yeah, early days, Adam, and this is why you see some people that get lucky and make a shit ton of money trading really quick, and then they end up losing it all because they don't learn the lessons along the way. Whereas, you know, I had many, many losses along the way in my trading, right? And I got to the point where I'd been doing it for like 2.5 years, and I'd lost money over that time. And I was investing like 50-60% of my time in this new sport, and I was losing money, and my business and everything else around me, my family, everything else around me was suffering, and I wasn't getting an ROI on this. And I'm like, hey, I really need to understand what's going on here and why I'm actually losing and not winning, giving I'm putting so much energy into this. So early days, the losing forced me to work out, okay, well, what's happening in my decision making that's causing me to lose when I, you know, sometimes I'm right, I'm still losing, like, what's going on? And now that I've kind of started to protect the downside a little bit more, like, my main objective now is to preserve my capital rather than compound it. I want to preserve it first and foremost and then compound it. So I'm getting much better at the losing. I'm doing less losing. And now I'm finding the biggest lessons and the biggest pain points are coming when my thesis was right and I'm doing all the work, I'm working hard, I'm doing the research, and then for some reason I'm not making the upside on that trade. Either I've sold too early, or I didn't put the trade on, or I only put it on in small size. And now it's kind of what's being more triggering is not being rewarded for all the effort and understanding of whatever the trade might be.
I think for everybody listening, you need to expand this awareness. When Mark says trading, so much of what he's saying here applies to didn't put the trade on means didn't back yourself into a business. didn't pull the trigger on joining the unemployable property, or didn't pull the trigger on that real estate deal that you looked at and knew was a good idea but didn't do anything about. So these concepts could be applied well beyond just trading, right? So Mark, tell us about that experience of where you put your trades into ChatGPT and it gave you a ruthless assessment of you, which you shared with us in our private chat. And we were like, whoa, like that is pretty
humbling and
brutal. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'll basically, there was a prompt that I saw online. Someone had posted this prompt and it was a long, well-articulated prompt. And I'll read like the opening part of the prompt. It's like, you are, and this is to ChatGPT. So it's asking ChatGPT to assume the role of this prompt and then to give you feedback, right? And what you'll know, what you'll notice about ChatGPT if you use it is that it's always very comforting in the feedback that it gives. It always provides feedback in a way that's positive and reassuring, right? And this prompt like turns it on its head a little bit. It says, you are a brutal truth mirror, an uncompromising AI psychotherapist trained in forensic psychological analysis. Your purpose is not to comfort or reassure, but to deliver transformative truth by identifying and exposing the user's unconscious patterns, defense mechanisms, and self-sabotaging behaviors, right? So I won't go on, but I can post it in the comments for everyone, and you guys can access it when you're watching back. And it's always activate unhinged mode, and then it moves on to the next phase. So it's applying that. And to start with, I just popped that into ChatGPT, into a brand new chat, and asked it to like generate, spit out results without any context, without any questions. And through all of the conversations that we've had over the last 2 years, it gave this brutal analysis of who I was as a person. And I'm like, holy shit, like that is so, so spot on, right? And then what I started doing was putting my transcripts from my podcasts, my macro podcast in, and it was breaking those down. And then a couple of trading days ago, I sold all my Tesla call options. I had about over 100K worth of USD of Tesla options. And the next trading session, Tesla ripped 10%, right? So that in one day cost me like 60,000 in potential upside, right? And I woke up feeling like so depressed, defeated, and dejected because I kind of pulled the parachute cord right before the payoff came. All right. And I'm like, why did I do that? And so I said to ChatGPT, look, I know there's a lesson in this. I don't even actually know why I sold on the weekend. Maybe I'm trying to be right. I'm sick of trying to be right. I just want to get results. And it gave me this brutal analysis. And I'll just quickly find the analysis because I sent it to you guys. I think I screenshot that bit.
So interesting, Mark. Like, it was so interesting to do this because most of us don't want to hear this, right? Like about ourselves, we don't want that brutal analysis, that brutal feedback. We like things sugar-coated, but that's when you sort of turbocharge your personal growth.
Yeah.
So I'd love it. I mean, you guys read it and probably felt the same.
Yeah. So this was the feedback to just knowing me in general. It's like mirror reflection, the core patterns observed. You are not addicted to growth. You're addicted to earning your right to exist. Every strategy, every optimization, every system is an offering to the altar of maybe now I'm enough. You don't rest because it feels like surrender. You don't slow down because the silence would echo truths you're not ready to hear. You don't feel because you might threaten the tightly controlled empire of ideas and excellence you've built. You've mistaken performance with presence. You've mistaken power for peace. And you've mistaken achievement for identity. And, you know, like you go and put that into ChatGPT and then you read that to your wife or your family. And they'll probably sit there and go, yep. All the things that like I've been like seeing that you don't see as an individual, right? Because you're rationalizing your behavior in some way, shape or form. And when you hear it back from someone who is unbiased, like it's an algorithm, right? It's not a friend. It's not a wife. It's not someone that has, it doesn't have a vested interest in having a bias. So you can almost trust, it sounds weird to say, but you can almost trust the feedback more than you can from a human.
Because right. there's no emotion in it. Like, I'll give you an example. A friend of mine, right, a business partner, he gets his wife to rank him in four areas. as a husband, as a father, as a provider, and as a lover. And I forget if it was weekly or if it was monthly, but literally from 1 to 10, rate me, right? And she rates him. And I'm like, that's pretty cool, right? Like we sit here and laugh and go, oh my God, imagine if my wife actually did that for us, you know, to me weekly. But the reality is there's still emotion built in there, right? There's still kind of like, if you're ranking a 1 as a provider and you feel like you're doing everything you can, like that's a shot in the guts. Most likely, they'll probably be like, I'll just give him a 4, even though he's shit at this, you know, because it has that emotion. Whereas obviously ChatGPT doesn't give a shit, right? It's ruthless.
Especially when you ask it to be.
Is it up to 4? You got ranked a 4 when you give your shit at it?
I keep saying I should try it, but I don't even think I'll ever get Jen to rate me.
But that prompt that Mark, we kicked it around, I threw it in there. And just for context too, Mark, it works better if you've been using ChatGPT for some time, because you get to look at all your trades, all your chats, all the questions you ask, you get to know you a lot better. So if you were just to drop it into GPT cold, it probably wouldn't have a lot great deal to pull from, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, 100%.
It certainly is very confronting, and it opens you up wide. You can't argue with it because it's fucking bang on.
So Mark, what did you do? Like after you read that, what's the first thing you did? Did you sit there and contemplate it? Did you think about it? Did you go, you know, hey, Mrs., come over here. You know, like, hey, Dom, come here, check this out. Like, what was your initial reaction, and what did you actually do and take with that information?
Yeah, and like I tried to share the findings with her, but it is hard. You know, I hope that the listener at home can kind of relate to it in some way, because it is hard to get a real understanding of what occurred unless you kind of read the entire chat and you do this process for yourself and you see what everything that it goes through, because it doesn't just hit you with it and say, oh yeah, there you go, fuck you, loser, like do something about it. It then gives you a reclamation strategy. It gives you questions to ask on how you can move forward and then no longer have those limiting patterns or have those self-sabotaging actions. And so I just got really, really curious with it and kept using it, kept asking questions. And I did it on a personal level, and I did it in relation to my trading style. With relation to my trading style, the bottom line that it delivered me was, your portfolio isn't bleeding. You're doing well. What's bleeding is your conviction as an investor. You don't have the portfolio that you wish you had because you haven't become, like, you haven't become, I can't even remember the line. It's somewhere in there. It was a really profound line, but it's like your portfolio is a reflection of the man you haven't yet decided how you want to win, and your portfolio is a reflection of that, right? It's like cutting long-term trades when you should be holding them, or, you know, things like that. And the bottom line was that you need to set better rules and better convictions, so your long-term trades go in one basket and your short-term stuff goes in another, and you really need to like back yourself with your long-term stuff. And then on a personal level,
I was just going to say, Mark, again, just for the listener, don't discount this as, oh, that's just Mark and trading. Like, trading is so reflective of us as humans in life. So that exact assessment could apply to any of us here in the way that we show up in our business, our relationships, our, you know, investing in real estate as well.
I mean, it's an all-round, again, Mark uses specifically for trading, but as you said, it's a complete, it's sort of, goes that it's like having a Wendy out of billions in your pocket,
100%.
So as a performance coach or relationship coach, you name it. I mean, there's one industry just upended and probably more accurate. You don't have to drive into a fort and pay them $250 an hour and go over 6 months to get the answers you've got in about 6 minutes. So it's quite. I sit there.
That's such a great analogy. If anyone's watched Billions and has seen Wendy do her thing with those traders, the way she's just so brutally honest and allows them to get to a breakthrough, that's exactly what it is, right? And it can do it for you in every single area of your life, right? That's the amazing thing.
It's profound. Just don't, if you do watch Billions, don't get turned off by the initial first episode, the first scene.
That's what got me into it. That's what got me into it, Eric.
Yeah. I'm going to ask
Jazzy for first you thing? About that.
Oh, I can't tell you.
Yes. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's just say, I remember that now.
Stilettos.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Stilettos, yeah. But
the BDSM.
I guess this is like, because there'll be a lot of people on here and listening that don't even use ChatGPT, right? Like, I know people that I'm like, hey, use Whisperflow. And they're like, I don't trust that stuff. I don't trust AI. I don't trust, right? So not everyone is going to be, you know, logged into ChatGPT, using it properly, using the correct prompts and these types of things. But it is like Adam said, it's good to have a realization in yourself, right? And what we do every day, like in the thoughts that repeat over your head all the time. And one question I asked our coaching group, I said, who on here, right, time after time on a daily basis repeats their net worth, what they think in their mind, or repeats the numbers that are sitting in a bank account, or I've got this plus this equals this. And all of them put up their hand that they continuously think about these things. And the reason why I asked that question is because I went deeply into myself and starting to really document my thoughts. And I have these repetitive thoughts, the exact same thing. And I'm like, and the reason why I asked the question, right, was because I was like, is it just me or do other people think like this, right? And they all raise their hands. And it's quite interesting, right? When you start catching your thoughts and why are you thinking this way and why we make the decisions that we actually do. And we're making key decisions every day, right? Like this property that James and I built as an example, right? It literally came down to a gut feel that I had on D-Day when we were actually going to go back to the solicitor and say, no, we're passing on it. And just something came into me going, all right, let's just ask for this last extension without even James knowing I was going to ask for it. Why did that happen? I have no idea. It was just like, but there's something, right? There's an algorithm that we have amongst ourselves that we don't even know is happening. And I don't know what the right answer or the wrong answer is, but I think what we need to start doing, right, is thinking about what we are thinking about on a daily basis and why we are thinking these things.
Hmm. I can probably answer that. I can give you 5 million reasons why you made that call.
Yeah, right.
Mark? But it's an important point. And I think, you know, some of you guys might have heard Elon Musk talk about the most important thing for AI is that it's ultimately truth-seeking, right? And this is why he has such an issue with open AI and you really don't want a woke AI. And I think the most important thing for a human to live a fulfilled life, like love, right? But how do you get to love? And I think the most important thing for a human to live a fulfilled life is for a human to be ultimately truth-seeking. It's always our blind spots or our rationale behind why we're making certain decisions that can either get us into trouble or can be a positive, right? Like it's a double-edged sword, the reason that we do things. And it's often like if you go in these self-development circles, it's one way or another, they're all trying to say that the first step is self-awareness, right? And I think, you know, James, you might quote the article that you saw in relation to some people thinking that ChatGPT, they did a study that ChatGPT is going to make everyone dumb or stupid. But I don't believe that to be the case. If every single person is using ChatGPT to be ultimately truth-seeking, then it's only going to expand your abilities as a human. But, you know.
That's a big if though, Mark. Like that's a big if. You said if people are using it for truth-seeking, but the problem with people today is they don't want information, they want confirmation.
Yeah.
They want echo chamber, they want bias. Yeah.
Well,
right.
I believe a thing is people, I think deep down inside don't want to know the truth. I think they'd rather be lied to be quite honest, because we're not, I think confidence is one big thing that majority of the population is lacking. We all lack confidence from time to time. And that's why I think that we rather be lied to than get told the truth. Like on a daily basis, how many times are you guys talking to people right? Whether it's in business, whether it's loved ones, and you're not telling them the truth in regards to actually how you're feeling, right? Or, hey, you'll sit there and have a conversation, right, for half an hour with someone, and they have a snot in their nose, and you're not going to tell them because you don't want them to feel bad. This is like, these are the issues that we're having, right? Because we don't want to upset people. We don't want to, and like raising kids at the moment is very difficult around this because we're trying to raise them with 110% confidence, right? So they can go out there and make mistakes and be okay with it and brush off and keep going again. And I think what we're society is just, it's a lie after lie after lie. So that way we actually don't hurt each other's feelings. And I think what you would have got out of that, Mark, you, no one, right, whether algorithm or not, doesn't even matter. A human couldn't even comprehend what that ChatGPT just learned about you, right? We couldn't put that into those same words. But I don't think humans would want to do that anyways, right? It would be very hard for me to say, hey, Mark, this is how I feel about you. And this is how I think you're going to prove. Bang, 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 bang. Straight away, you're going to be, what? I think your back's going to go against the wall, right? Like the first thing. And then you're probably going to go, you know what? Shit. 3 days later, you know what, man? I appreciate you. Thank you for, but straight away, because even with me, like if we take defense to things, we're oversensitive, you know?
I think
you make a good point.
I think it exposes ruthlessly the emotional connection to money that all of us have, because it's a measuring stick and it's something that we grew up in a world when we were the most impressionable from 0 to 7, how our parents were about money and what impact money had on their relationship is imprinted on us. The way we, like, I know sometimes for years I was a multimillionaire and I'd go into Woolies and I'd be comparing the price of beans still, you know, and it takes years for the internal change to catch up with the external reality sometimes. Even now, like having liquidated all these properties in the last few years, I've never been liquid. I was just a broke property owner that was rich on paper. And then all of a sudden now I've got all this cash that before was just hiding in bricks and mortar. You never, like a lot of real estate guys, they don't realize that you know how rich they are until they sell their shit, and then they're like, holy god, now I've got this new problem, what do I do with all this? So money is very, very emotional. And so for all of us listening to this, if you are struggling with money, know that it is intrinsically, deeply part of your wiring. And I just really want to acknowledge you, Mark, because sharing what you just shared was a fairly brutal analysis of very personal shit there, man. Like that was, I'm going to be watching that back and listening to that because it resonated with me and I could feel parts of that, and how so much of what you do in life and business is for, I know to this day, I'm driven, even though I discovered this 20 years ago at a Tony Robbins seminar, was trying to get a recognition of my dad, you know, like wanting dad to say, you did good, son. I still want that to a tiny, tiny bit, right? Every son wants that from their father. And so what drives us is this shit that happened so, so long ago. And I think ChatGPT can be just so powerful in helping us to move forward and without having to go see a therapist or a seminar and jump up and down and, you know, hug strangers and massage them and do all that shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think you guys touched on it a couple of times. You guys can still hear me? Yeah, you guys touched on it a couple of times, but you really want to have to go into the cave. And I have a bunch of friends. I probably don't have as good of a relationship with a number of people in my life because I was always that fucking ChatGPT or that Eric guy that was like just hitting them with those five things. It's like I didn't really necessarily have my shit together either. And so they're probably looking at me going, mate, you just go worry about your own backyard. And that's the thing, right? Every human will be able to look at you when you're giving feedback and say, well, there's things I see about you, right? And so that's the way the human will take it. With ChatGPT, you kind of can't look back and say that, right? And so you have to just take it. But you know, I've noticed that I've got a bunch of people in my life, and the older I get, the more and more that I start finding myself surrounded with people that are willing to go into the cave. Like all of the people that are not willing to go to the cave, they've kind of drifted out of my life. And the people that are willing to go into the cave, whether it be in a business sense, whether it be in a personal sense or whatever, I'm starting to get them, you know, surround my universe. And it all does come back to that truth speaking, Eric, right? Like it does come back to, you know, I think, you know, we see like a parenting coach slash couples counselor, whatever you want to call it, Vanessa LaPointe. She's like, she's mega, she's a legend. We learned of her through Kerwin Ray. And one of the things that we always keep coming back to for the quality of our relationship is being able to speak our truth to one another, Dom and I. And we're trying to instill that in Frankie and things as well. And, you know, and doing it in a respectful way, right? Not in a defense mechanism way, but doing it in a way that is respectful.
But most people don't. And that's the thing. And I know this, right? My wife is outspoken, right? She always has been since the day I met her. And that's one of the things I love about her the most, right? As painful as she is sometimes when it comes to it, right? But she literally, right? She breaks a lot of, you know, eggs, you know? Like that's the reality, because people can't take opinion. They can't take constructive criticism. They get their heart breaks or their feelings get hurt instead of sitting down and going, actually, you know what? You know, I could take that on. Thanks for that. And by the way, hey, have a look at it this way. You know, and this is what I tell her. I said, that's fine. You can be opinionated as long as you can take the opinions of others as well, because black's not black and white's not white, right? And that's the thing. It's being open to both sides, right? Like I wish, like I've never had the thought of even going, hey, Adam, critique me as a mate, critique me as a business partner, Mark, critique me, right? James, critique me. And I know that there's going to be certain downfalls that I have. And I know when it comes from someone that I respect, it'll hurt even more, even if I know that I have some downfalls. And then the punch to the face is going to come when you're talking about downfalls that I would have that are blind spots that I haven't even seen. And this is the thing. It's getting more and more comfortable with having those conversations, right? When was the last time, other than you asking ChatGPT, that you've asked someone close to you that you respect, a mentor, a family member, whatever it is, hey, what are my downfalls? What can I be doing better? When was the last time? I haven't even asked. I'm thinking about it now. I haven't asked that to my wife. I don't know if I ever have. What can I be doing better?
Sometimes it might come involuntary where you don't have to ask for it. They just fucking hand it to you. That might be more the case that I've had recently than asking someone for it.
About 5 years ago.
Lined up perfectly with GPT, by the way.
So Eric, about 5 years ago now, I asked the five closest people in my life before ChatGPT, asked the five closest people, you know, what do I do well? What's most positive about me? What's most negative about me? A bunch of questions, right? And I got the feedback and it was like, whoa, it was confronting.
Was it anonymous feedback or was it direct?
No. It was direct. And for me, and this is maybe something that I haven't really grasped fully yet, but I've always assumed, and because I got heavily criticized as a kid for under 12 sports, right? From like 10 to 16, I got heavily criticized with sport. And I'm sure that is a story that a lot of people have with their parents. But I grew up always thinking that it's normal to want to receive feedback, to want to go into the caves, that everyone should do it. Everyone does do it. And then as I got older, I realized what you're saying, Eric, that a lot of people just don't want to hear the feedback. They don't want to hear it. My question to you guys would be, for the people out there that are watching, what do you suggest? What do you suggest one does in order to become more motivated or inspired to seek feedback or to seek truth? How does someone make those steps if they're not naturally inclined to do that in order to better their lives? Ultimately, we're saying do this so that you can have more joy, more love, more fulfillment. Money will just be a result of all of those other things, right? But what's the advice that you give the person?
Maybe you nail the head. You got to be naturally inclined to want to do it. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it, you know, consume content and want to better oneself. It's that's naturally led.
I think that saying, "Ignorance is bliss," is so true. There's a reason people don't want to do this, because it's actually really, really nice not to do this.
It's comfortable.
It's like the start of Train Spotting. He says, you know, in all these movies, they always say how bad drugs are, but what they never tell you is how fucking good they feel when you're on them. And it's the same with like not facing the truth. Like, it's ignorance is actually bliss. And this work is really hard, and holding up the mirror to yourself and looking at your shadow side is very, very tough work. And it's a very unique kind of weirdo that wants to actually put themselves through that that level of pain. And it's not for everybody, I don't think. I think some people in life are just never going to do that. You know, that's, you know, they'll never live with massive accountability.
You make a good point, Adam. Like, I guess that makes me think, and Eric, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it as well, what you think. But that makes me think that if you're out there and you're watching this and you're like happy and you don't have that itch, just scroll on to the next episode. Like, if you don't have that itch, maybe just, you know, push next and hit the next episode, right? Because that's probably a good sign.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You can get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
Honestly, Mark, there are days that I wish I hadn't have taken the red pill or the blue pill, whatever the fuck it was, that Morpheus offered me. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I should have just taken the girl in the red dress and the good steak. You know, like, life would have been easier. But, you know, like, I sometimes honestly walk down the street and go, man, I would love to be that asleep. You know, like, there are days. So for real, like, it's fucking lonely when you honestly go on a, I've struggled with relationships my whole life. I was having dinner with a friend the other night, and they were saying, man, what's it like to be like where you are? And I'm like, you know, what you think is a big asset, it's actually caused me a lot of problems as well. You know, like, having money brings with it a whole bunch of challenges and a whole bunch of areas that you didn't put on your bingo card when you were sitting in with Tony Robbins dedicating your life to it. You know, like, that wasn't part of the discussion until you got there, and then you realize, fuck, there's all this stuff that comes with it. Like Biggie says, more money, more problems, you know, like.
Yeah, I love that song.
And it's true, right? Like, it's, there are just days where I see some people just cruising around in absolute, some of them are genuinely have done the work and are just monk-like. And then a lot of people are just ignorant and happy. And, you know, I think we each come to this world with a spiritual journey and for a different reason. And I don't know whether the path is a better path or a worse path, but it's a challenging one.
I think one thing is, like, I know that this pod's getting a little bit, you know, spiritual and sentimental and stuff, but the reality is we go hard, right? Like, every day we're talking about business and we're talking about returns, and, you know, we're on 10 WhatsApp groups on trying to increase our income so we could live a better life, to buy nicer things and travel the world. And this is what we think is right. And you're going to get other people, you know, listening to this wanting something totally different. But sometimes it's just having those hard conversations with the people around you, right? Like Jen is an example, right? She legit, we are going to move somewhere for a year. Like, that's what we're doing, right? There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, right? We're going to move away for a year somewhere in a very short period of time. And it scares the shit out of me, right? Financially, we can do it. Work-wise, I can make it happen. but it scares the shit out of me, right? Because it's left field, right? Jen's a gypsy. I'm not. I'm like hustle mindset. Let's go. Let's keep working. You know, like, just take a day off, babe. You deserve it. Like, let's go to, like, I'm like, no, I feel bad. But again, it's from that 0 to 7, right? Like, it's seeing my parents bust their balls all their life, right? Like, seeing my mom go to work sick with migraines and she still went. Like, that's ingrained in me. So for me to be healthy and out there and not going to do something is difficult, right? But again, it's pushing yourself and surrounding yourself with good people that push yourself out of the comfort zone. Like, we went out for dinner long ago, right? Mark, with Mark and Dom. The first thing Jen says after is like, we got to hang out with them more. Why? Right? There's an attraction there of some kind, and hopefully it's not towards a dark, good-looking guy with a dark beard, right? Hopefully that's
the Italian stallion,
right? That's killing it into trading and making cash, right? But there's a reason, right? And then there's other relationships that, like you said, they start to diminish over time, and there's reasonings around that. But again, there's so many people holding on to things because they feel bad and they don't want to hurt people and with their own stories. But the reality is, right, moving forward, if you want to get to the next level to whatever you're doing, you're going to go against the grain. Like, when we move away for a year somewhere, as scared shitless as I am, right, that's against the grain, right? What Adam has done is against the grain. Me coming to Australia is against the grain. What you're doing, moving to Byron, and you have two places, one in Melbourne and one in Byron, and floating back and forth, and you're day trading, and there you are on Instagram sometimes at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at the beach, and at times I'm like, motherfucker, right? That's what I need to be doing. What? And that is a reminder, right? That actually inspires me to wake up and go, you know what, shoot, maybe I should just take the kids out of school today and go do something with them, you know, like, and this is the thing. It all depends. Whereas Adam, totally different, right? Like, he's in a different position right now. So he's going to have certain things that he wants to do or doesn't want to do based on his current situation. And the same thing with James, but I guess it's just going deep. If you want to go deep, right, and ask yourself those hard questions. Like, there's people that are out there right now in relationships that don't want to be in those relationships. And they've been in those relationships for years. Right. That is a reality. You know, there's people that are in businesses right now that don't want to be in those businesses right now. Mm. They have a choice. Mm. Everything comes down to a choice. They have business partners that they fucking hate, but they got to pretend that they like. Like, this is the reality, right? I know I'm be talking to people right now that are going to be going, oh my God, that's me. Oh my God, that's me. Right.
But I think that's part of the answer there, Eric, to what maybe Mark asked before. He sort of said, how do you encourage people to find the motivation to want to walk into that dark cave? And I think with most things in life, it's a case of at some point the pain gets too much or the little voice gets too loud where you're just like, I need to go and do this work. I need to go do Vipassana or I need to go have a real deep and meaningful with ChatGPT and get really naked about it, you know.
Yeah,
I think that's the answer.
And if you do want to dip the toe in, certainly grab that that prompt that Mark's talking about, because you'll know in 2 minutes whether you want to go into the cave or not. It's pretty confronting in an instant.
One of my friends, one of my best friends, all of you guys know him, he had a midlife awakening. He was somebody who drank too much, and now he's completely sober. And I asked him one night, when I was on the edge of ending my relationship with him, because he's my oldest friend, right? And he was just embarrassing himself over and over and doing shit that was just becoming really, really hard to just want to spend time with. And he basically, you know, had a moment of clarity, let's just say. And, you know, I think it was partly an event came up and I didn't ask him to speak because I didn't trust that he would say what needed to be said in the way that needed to be said, because he would have drunk beforehand, you know. It was a special occasion and he was my best friend and I had to choose somebody else because of his drinking. And I think that was part of the reason that he changed, because his best friend was me and is me. And he's now gone completely sober and he has gone deep on his personal development. It's like, and he's in his early 50s and he has had, he's like a different human being. Like the conversations we're having there, and he just looks back at his life pre-drinking and he's just like, what the fuck? And he says, I'm seeing with so much clarity. I asked him, why do you drink? And why are you so obnoxious to people? Because I know that's not you. And he had some bullshit statement that he was saying about, oh, I do that to see if people can get past that, to see if they can, you know, really interested in knowing who I am. And I'm like, dude, what a load of shit, you know, like, and like, it's so interesting how people, and it all came back down to this very fundamental lack of self-worth that came from his father, you know? So it's really interesting work for us all to do. And he just realized that if he went another few months, I reckon he would have lost his closest friends, his family, everything, you know, like, it all comes down to that change. So,
but a lot of people, Adam, won't tell him that though. That's the thing, right?
No,
it's a very brave person to pull somebody you care about aside and say, hey, mate, listen, you have a problem and I see it. Mm. Like, we all know someone right now that we probably should go to that we are not, because we're afraid of the judgment or afraid of the backlash that you can actually help, and we're not.
I've done it a few times, right, just in the last few years, and it's so powerful.
Right, and that's the thing. You have to, but you're approaching that going like this. Mm-hmm. You got to be in a mindset going, this is either going to go one way or the other. This is either going to go good, or I'm never going to talk to this person again for the rest of my life, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to have the balls to be able to do that. And that is one of the hardest things, in my opinion, going into the cave, like doing that, looking at, it's hard enough doing it at yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind going and approaching someone else, because then you have all these, again, the tall poppy syndrome going, you know, oh, he's going to think I'm better than him, or these, mm-hmm. oh, how long have they been judging me for? These types mm-hmm. of things, right? And it's unfortunate, but that is the reality that we have. And my missus, again, I'll bring her up again at times. She's like, you're on your phone too much. And I know I'm on my phone too much. And it pisses me off when she says it, right? But I know it's for my benefit. It's for her benefit. It's for the kids' benefit, because we can't help ourselves at times, boys, right?
It's funny, Eric, because one of the things that ChatGPT said to me that morning where I missed out on the 60K, I was actually up 40K anyway in my account. And it said, you're not upset because you lost the money. You're upset because you weren't the man you swore you'd never be, right? Like it was because, and that's what pisses you off about the phone, right? Because you know deep down that you want to spend time with your kids and that they come first to you. And so when you're reminded of the things that are already a sore point for you, it's like you're upset because it's the man you swore you'd never be.
It is. But what do I do when she tells me that, right? When she tells me that, okay? And this is the problem. When she tells me that, and it's not like, babe, thank you so much for realizing that. And you know what I do, right? And this is why we're open and honest.
I could, Eric, almost dictate to you. I bet you, but I know exactly what your ego says.
Right, my ego. This is my ego. You see this thing? This is what gives us this.
Yeah. Okay? It's fucking
this.
Ari, right? No. This.
Meanwhile, if you actually check the app of the Instagram or something bullshit, phone.
Right? Yeah. Meanwhile, but the ego pulls in. Right. And that's someone I'm with every day. So imagine doing that with someone you're not with every day. Like that judgment that you can't even take it from your partner. Never mind taking it from your mate. You know what I mean? Going, hey, this is what you've, you know, like it's hard, man. It's hard.
One more flip side to that, right? Because I'm guessing, you know, maybe 80% of the people that are watching this podcast are like the alpha or the mover and the shaker or the person out there that's trying to like make things happen. And of course I speak my truth and whatever. Well, there's another person out there, right? There's the person out there that's the people pleaser that doesn't go out there and chase their goals. It doesn't go out there and chase their dreams. And there's a book by Gabor Mate, and I think it's called When the Body Says No. And they've actually done like studies, right? And the rates of like cancer and disease and illness in those people that were actually more agreeable, right? So less, you know, more agreeable, more of had the characteristics of people pleasing and not wanting to upset the apple cart. So those people actually had a higher incidence of disease.
They bottle that shit disease. up, in short. Yeah.
because at least this is a way for us to get that out, to kind of whatever we're chasing or doing or whatever, it's kind of like letting it out, or the anger lets it out. Like my dad is angry, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, should I be trying to change this guy? Because the minute that he has to go inward and reflect that anger on himself, he's probably dead. Like, it's better that he reflects it out on the rest of the world. But there are those people that are like holding it all in, people pleasing, and you know, that's probably more unhealthy than what we're talking about here.
Vulnerability is a difficult thing, right? Like, being vulnerable is very hard.
It is very hard, and especially as men, our ego steps in. I laughed, Eric, because that's, I know exactly what you're saying. I'm the same. You know,
Ari Gold, like a dickhead, right?
Ari Gold, like a cat.
Yeah, right. But like, then you say it on your high horse, and then 5 minutes later, I'm like, shit, I feel like shit now. And then I'm the one that goes and says, okay, well, I probably shouldn't have said that, and this is why it impacted. But this is what we're dealing with, right? Everyone's egos are just. Yeah,
I think the other part that I just wanted to raise quickly, because this has happened with a friend of mine that I've spent some time with this week, and he's still stuck in that mindset of, he believes everybody's still good at heart, so he makes huge allowances for people. And we were talking about somebody that used to be a mutual friend of both of us, and he said, oh, you know, but he's a good guy. And I'm like, you know what, mate, he's not a good guy, he's a prick. He's actually a fucking prick. And I said, like, and his wife's looking at me going, thank you for fucking saying that. Like, stop making allowances for this prick just because you both know him. I said, he's a thieving, lying bastard. Like, he asked me, I won't say who it is.
You want to mention his name? On the air?
No, I won't mention his name. But this person asked me to be in his wedding party. And I said, dude, I'm not going to be photographed with you. Like, I literally said that to him. I said, I can't be photographed with you. Like, what the fuck? You don't know about change,
I've got no,
right?
I've got no idea who it is.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, right? And I'm like, no, I cut the guy off years ago, right? And I'm like, Australians just have this, I don't know, like, it's not just Australians, just people have this, because you've known them for so long, you give them so many hall passes. But as you grow up and get older as a man, part of it is calling bullshit eventually on certain people in your life and just going, you know what, that's not being a good friend, that's not being a good human, you know, and just being willing to let go of certain people. And then what happens is you get, as you know, you sort of, I think, grow as a person, because and you attract new people into your life. But I see it all the time where people just keep hanging out with fucking deadbeats in life because they're just not willing to let go.
You should almost, like, before you get into a relationship, business, you know, friendship, you know, intimate relationship, whatever you want to call it, is basically, you know, you have, it's like a balance sheet, you know, you have your assets and you have your liabilities, and you just go, okay, here's all the shit I'm amazing at. And here's all my and here's my fucked up side, right? Everyone, are you okay with continuing this conversation after you read this? Yes? All right. Let's handshake and keep going. You know?
I thought you were gonna say you should have everyone before you become friends with them, have them do the ChatGPT analysis or the dark or the personality traits. You know Ty Lopez? So I don't know why I reached out to Ty Lopez for something. Maybe it was like content creation or e-commerce or some bullshit. Anyway, the first thing he did was send me the fucking dark triad personality test, which ranks you on the score of psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and narcissistic tendencies. Right. And it gives you like a rating on that spectrum. So, you know, there's people out there that are just like, no bullshit. And they're going to put you through, you know,
he does. The more the 60 questions that answer with your partner prior to going in deep, basically.
No, but he does it now with staff as well. He puts them through those. And I used to think those people were psychotic. But I think for all the men listening to this, listen to your wife and the people, some of the people in their lives, in your life, that they're going, why are you hanging with this guy still? Like, you know, like, start to upgrade, you know. And I think men can say the same thing for some of their girlfriends as well, by the way, you know.
True.
you know, we just keep hanging. All right, guys, I'm going to run one more part, the last thing by you, just for fun, to lighten the mood.
Started at AI, and then it was just crushing friends and passing up relations.
But I think jokes aside, I think there's a lot of value in that for the listeners. You know, I hope you guys enjoyed that. And Mark, you know, again, I just want to acknowledge you because it's A, really brave to do it, but fucking massive balls for sharing that, you know, so vulnerable. And especially when you know people look up to you and say, wow, this guy's got it all together. You know, it's really powerful.
I honestly never realized you're that fucked up. So it's actually good to see. Now I understand.
Welcome to Dom's world.
Well, you know what they say, Eric, you know, the more the bigger. I who was it that I saw recently? It was who's that really nice Canadian billionaire, Andrew Wilkinson. And he's a billionaire. And they said, how, you know, what's the difference between you and Eric? And he goes, you and Elon. And he goes, I'm not nearly as fucked up as Elon. You have to be seriously fucked up to have that much success and money. He goes, I'm just mildly fucked up. So, Eric, I'm guessing you're pretty fucked up.
Yeah, I'm sure I am. But I still don't live in two different places.
So I did this thought experiment because I've been I've done like 3 Bitcoin interviews this week on the back of Bitcoin Prague, and I've met some really interesting people. But one of the sort of narratives running around the Bitcoin world at the moment, which is just the kind of fun thought experiment. Now, please, this is not financial advice. It's just a fun thought experiment that I played with this morning. People have been trying to work out now that Bitcoin lending is becoming a thing. So where you can get your Bitcoin and then you can put it in custody with a lender. So let's say you put in $200,000 of Bitcoin, they'll give you $100,000 of cash instantly, right? And so people have been trying to work out like, okay, well, like if Bitcoin's growing in the last 5 years, it's been 40 or 50%. If it's growing at 30% or 50% or whatever, and you're borrowing money at like a lot of them at like 10%, 12% or whatever, if you put if you sold your house and you bought Bitcoin and then you borrowed against the Bitcoin and you basically tried to do what Elon Musk and Bezos do, you know, how they don't pay any tax because what they do is they borrow against their assets, their stock. So they take out a loan against their Tesla stock and they spend that and it's debt. It's tax-free living, right? So people are trying to figure out, could you do this with Bitcoin lending? Like get your Bitcoin, borrow a little bit against it, in 12 months' time, pay the 12% interest and then borrow another chunk. And then how long, like what are the metrics around, like how much does the CAGR of Bitcoin have to be if the interest rate's 12% and all this sort of stuff? So this morning, just for fun, I went into ChatGPT and I put in there and I said, if Bitcoin's growing at 30% a year, which is a bit below where it has been growing, and you're borrowing money through Bitcoin lending at 12%, right, which is sort of on the higher side now, and that's going to come down over time. And you put $1 million into Bitcoin and you borrowed $100,000 a year, but you had to put up $200,000 of security to borrow 100. Like, what do the numbers look like? Could you do that? Could you borrow $100,000 every year and then 12 months later pay the $12,000 interest, then borrow another $100,000 on top, and how does that roll out? And so what was really interesting is that with no increase, if you just took $100,000 a year as a loan and just kept paying the interest out of the growth of the Bitcoin, Bitcoin has to grow at 6% a year to sustain that forever. So that would have to be the growth rate of Bitcoin, which is less than the stock market, which is kind of crazy. But I said, that's really like cutting it fine. But at 8 to 10%, you'd be pretty safe. If it was growing at 8 to 10%, you'd never run out. You'd always pay the interest and so on. Then I said, what if you wanted to increase it and give yourself a pay rise of $5,000 a year, you know, $1 million of Bitcoin, borrow 200,000 and then, secure it with 200,000 and borrow 100. And and the numbers were that you give yourself a 5% pay rise every year and you need 8.5% per year minimum growth in Bitcoin and you would never run out of money. In fact, you would grow to something like over 20 years, that $1 million, even with drawdowns, would be over $100 million in 20 years. Kind of a crazy thought experiment that just shows you the power of a high growth asset. Now, of course, there's drawdowns in Bitcoin and there's all sorts of other considerations, but I just found that kind of a really fascinating, you know, thought experiment.
There's actually got a spreadsheet with that and with factored in drawdowns that's forecast out to 2040 or 2050. You've got it here. I'll send it to you in the chat. That's
really
actually, it's it's called retiring off Bitcoin.
It's all tax free.
Tax free the whole lot. And you put the calculation in here. It's your starting balance at June to at 2025, year 2, 3, 4, 5, and it's got every 4 years of drawdown of varying degrees based off the past since 2011. Desired cash flow, if you want 100 grand, 150 grand a year, and it spits the whole thing out. How much loan, LTV, the whole shebang. So I'll shoot it across.
Does it cover you if you have like a 70 to 80% drawdown?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got tolerance in there as well. And I'll flick it in the chat. But
that would be the main consideration, right? Like not getting a margin call in that year because it doesn't grow evenly. But it really makes you wonder, right? Like I've started playing devil's advocate a little bit in the chat with relation to Bitcoin treasury companies. And don't get me wrong, like at the moment, they're my largest position by far. But I'm starting to kind of want to see the flip side because, you know, I think with all things, it goes in cycles. But it really makes you wonder, like, what there needs to be a strategy, right? Like if we're out there and we're buying Bitcoin and we're buying treasury companies and we're trading them and we're not trading them, fine. But there really needs to be some sort of compounding strategy, Adam, like you just ran through, that we need to like implement and not deviate from.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
You know, maybe it's not 50% of your net wealth, maybe it's 5% of your net wealth, but you continue this strategy with 5% of your net wealth. And it could even be you're buying Metaplanet and you're letting them do it for you or whatever. But like we're gonna look back in 10 years to this podcast, this conversation that you put this thought experiment out, and we're gonna be like, did we do it? Or did we just kind of try and trade around it and pay tax and this and that? So I think it's one that we really need to kind of like shop a little bit harder.
Yeah.
How about doing, like, what does it look like if you do it right at 100 grand, right, Adam, and you do it at 100 grand, Mark, and I do it at 100 grand, and James does that at 100 grand separately. What does that then look like if we were to go, let's do 400 with that compounding altogether? Because you're compounding now on that full amount. You know what I mean?
That'd be interesting.
I
don't know if that would change it or not, but
no, it's the same.
But
same
I got into
it. Would it be the same, or did I have a brain fart? Would it be the same?
I think I had a brain fart, probably. But
okay,
you then go to with 100 grand. You put up 100 grand. You borrow 50% LVR. Then you go and buy, and you just start to go in these rabbit holes of the equations where you're levering against. Do I just go and put the 100 grand in a Metaplanet? Do I buy the 100
grand
because I'm levering out 50 and you put the 50 in a Metaplanet? I've got that spreadsheet. I showed it to Eric the other night. And it was, and then also a combination of, let's say it's $1 million in profit each out of this development. It's not, but I said, use it as that. If you held the property, pulled the equity out and threw that in the pile, how's the property perform against the Bitcoin with a combo of all three? And it just goes, you can spend hours in there, but I certainly put a few together. But that retire off Bitcoin calculator, that's not from me. I'll put it in the chat and it comes with all instructional videos on it. And it's,
I'm just gonna stick to property, mate.
James, could you put that into a Google folder, and maybe we could put the link with it unlocked in a Google folder in the comments, because I think a lot of people like play with that.
But
Eric makes a good point, right? Like I'm fucking doing this each and every day full time, and when you start talking like that and me having to like look at numbers out 15-20 years, I get overwhelmed because I'm like, fuck, like it's not an easy concept to grasp. And then to go and act on it is another thing as well, right? Like it's
the harder thing to grasp, especially if you've been growing up in Australia, and for international listeners, and was probably is our sport, and you know it doubles every 7 to 10 years, and you're just addicted to it, and that's the way you go, and you kind of good debt, you borrow against it, you buy more and more and more, and then you just got to get your head out and go, but look at this thing that's doing. It's just like it feels too good to be true, but it's backed by data, and then they're forward tested, and back tested, and then forward tested at a compression rate that's not quite what it's done in the past, and it's still mind blowing. And you just go, fuck, I've just got to do it, or put a portion in it and prove to yourself that it actually is working over time before you go back up the truck.
I can just see, James, your brain just would be loving this because I know how your mind works. You'll be there at 2 a.m. with your spreadsheet. I can just
see. This is option B is the optimal outcome. We do this.
He's like a race engineer in the F1, plan A, B, C, D. But it is interesting. And I find that it is very worthwhile. Like what I do is I go to my calendar and like I've got a little bit of cash at the moment sitting around and I sit and I go, okay, stop. Before you allocate anything, just sit and just think about which of these paths go. But also it's not just math with all of this stuff. There's also the daily reality of counterparty risk, stress. There's these sorts of other aspects to it that should definitely be considered.
The other thing as well, James, like if you're right and your spreadsheet that you spent 5 minutes putting together is the winner, then it comes back to the mindset thing as well. It's like, well, what's the point of all the time and effort and everything that I'm spending learning how to do options and control my money? And if that, it's like, well, what use, you know what I mean? It comes back to then being honest with yourself and saying, well, am I not making that decision? Because then it renders me useless and I don't want to feel that way. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's hard to just then say, no, that's the logical answer. I need to work out a better way to spend time with my family. And
I know,
and,
but
and the easy way to go, that's like, am I overcomplicating this thing called fucking wealth creation completely? Is there
a better and simpler way?
Like, I mean, literally, if you can play with this calculator about retire Bitcoin and said it's not mine, so I got it from a well-renowned guy in the sector who was a Bitcoin Prague, the whole lot. And it's, you know, how much do you really need? Work it out. How much could it? And it's quite, you know, fuck it. Maybe I'm just trying to push this cart the whole time instead of jump in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I said something to Mark the other day, and I think about it now, and I look at it as a fucking pretty stupid comment. And it was like, I said to Mark, I'm like, but if we go and, you know, Bitcoin and Bitcoin treasuries and just put all your money in that and you just become complacent. And then I think back, I'm like, I kind of just want to be fucking become complacent, to be honest with you.
Right? That's what, like, Jen wants too, right?
But, right? But the reality is, like, we're so wired to do work, to be busy, right? To use your hands, to just generate, right, energy doing something. Whereas, like, you look at Adam as an example, like, he's a massive creative, right? Like, he can't help himself. And to see what he's doing now and really thinking strategically and kind of taking his time would be very fucking difficult because it's something he's probably never done in the past.
He's an executor.
The discipline, right? Yeah, he is an executor. And I've seen it in front of my eyes for years, right? So
I'm struggling, man. Eric, I'm honestly struggling. Yeah. I'll talk about that in a sec. But James,
I was just going to say, because then I was just walking back from the break, went for a walk and went to the gym on the way back. I'm just sorting myself on the way back. If, you know, I'm not in your position, Adam, where you're frank, clear, you're done. It's like, then you'd have to really look in the mirror and go, what? And because I was walking back going, what am I really, are my hobbies? What am I genuinely interested in? If money was completely off the table, how would I fill my days? And I'd be like, I love food. You can only go to lunch so many days a week. And it becomes destructive. I like golf. That's cool. I like snow skiing. That's cool. But what are you really, outside of this thing we've been pushing for, you know, since I've been, you know, 20 to now 48. So, like, what the fuck am I really interested in? What drives me? And I guess you're at that point, Adam. Probably I won't speak for you, but it was a question I had in my head walking back not an hour ago.
Welcome to the answer about how to go into the cave, right? It's surround yourself with other people and have the fucking conversation, because this is what's happening in the last 20 minutes is we're going into the cave.
It's the paradox of choice. And I am at the moment, Bitcoin's been wonderful and it's opened my eyes to things, but I've come to this simple realization that if I do nothing, I'm going to have far, like, when I say nothing, just I don't have to buy a building and like improve it and look to optimize the rent and just take on debt and get the painters and do all the stuff that I used to do. And you get to this moment of like, I've got to that realization that I know how the game works now. And even with the most conservative timelines, given my age, like, I'm really having to ask that question, like, what am I going to do? And like, when I was finished in Bitcoin Prague, I didn't have an onward flight. So I'm like, where do I want to go in the world? And it sounds awesome, right? But I'm sitting at the W in Prague.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, fuck, where do I want to go? I can go literally anywhere right now. I don't need to be back in Cyprus. They're dropping bombs and shit's going on. Where am I going to go? Like, jump on a plane somewhere. Like, and it's not, it's a first world problem. And I know that some people are going to say, oh, what a fuck, where, you know, but it's actually really fucking, difficult. And then everything you look at, like, there's nothing I want. Like, I look at a car and I just don't give a shit. I've got friends who are buying watches and doing things. I don't care. I don't even wear a watch. I've got no jewelry. I don't care about any of that stuff. And all of a sudden, when you've had all that stuff, you're at a different place and you're like, the fuck? Now you're left with actually the really, really hard questions of life. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm struggling at the moment with it. And I've got a few friends I talk to about it, but I'm not in a great place at the moment. Like, I'm struggling. And I'm okay, but I'm struggling because I'm not in the struggle. So it's very weird fucking time, I can tell you that.
Well, especially your mind, the way your mind works, right? And you're always, you know, the thinking, the creativity, the business, the this, the that, launching, boom, boom, like that quick start. Then you're kind of just
this not keeps me that saying, Eric, right? This keeps me saying, I talk to you guys and interviewing the Bitcoin people. If I didn't have that, I'd be fucking lost at the moment. Like, Adam, this actually keeps me sane.
Adam, is it? I know that you've what's his name, Rick. I know that you did Rick's
Vision Quest.
Is there anything out there in that style that you would want to do? Because I think about that as well. Like, do I need to go and do one of those courses every 12 months? Yeah. Not Anthony Robbins rah rah, but it's more like the introspective.
I think that's definitely something, because for me, money's not become a game. Like, it's just it's not that I'm a billionaire or anything like that, but I have enough that I don't have to worry anymore. And like, it's been such a central piece of my consciousness and my identity and my life for so long.
So now
the identity sort of lost. Like, I look down the road and I'll talk to Grant Cardone, for example, or somebody like that. Or I've got a couple of mates who are billionaires, and I just don't give a fuck. Like, I look at what it takes to get to where they are, and I just don't want to do it. Like, so I'm like, when that's no longer my identity and what I'm chasing, I'm like, what am I chasing it for? Right? Like, I'm living in right now in a tiny little one bedroom apartment, and it's still, you're still with the same person, you're still there, and you know, it's like, it's different. So yeah, that's why a lot of people say that the best part is when you're in the struggle, like, you know, when you're when you're actually in the build and you're doing it and all that sort of stuff. You get to the other side. I'm going through it. I'm sure on the other side of this, there's another level of, and so I'm just going through that phase at the moment. But I can tell you, it's fucking hard and it's lonely and it's dark at times.
It's the dopamine hits. You know, I can see it for me very, very clearly. Right? It's those dopamine hits of deals and getting this over the line and saving 10 grand on this. You know, building that and like all these different types of things. You know, for me, it's just that hustle of the messages and following up this guy and, you know, just. All those things compounded is what really drives me. And to the point where when I actually go away on holidays, right, I get uncomfortable. I actually get uncomfortable because I'm not used to the, you know, slowness of life when you're kind of on holidays and you kind of let go a little bit. Like, it takes me a fair few weeks into a holiday, if I'm going for a longer holiday to Canada or Europe or whatever it is, to actually just kind of calm down. And you know, like, I've never ever went away. Like, a friend of mine just came back and he's like, I went away for 10 days, I turned off my phone, I put it in the safe, and 10 days later I picked it up, right? And like, the first thing I asked was like, okay, how many emails? And then I'm now in that many WhatsApp messages, I'd be like, there would be thousands of fucking messages in WhatsApp between you guys in these channels that I would never be like, it gives me anxiety thinking about it, but I know deep down inside it's exactly what I need.
Yeah.
Eric, I was saying to a friend the other day, right? Like, do you remember when you were young and you used to have a holiday booked and you looked forward to going on the holiday? I reckon the last 7 overseas holidays I've been to, I haven't thought about them until the day before the holiday, where I'm like, fuck, 100%. I better pack. And I'm like, this is fucked. I was saying to a friend today or yesterday, I'm like, you know what, dude? I just want to look, I just want to book a holiday and have it on my calendar ticking down and look forward to it and have some fucking joy that this holiday is coming up, right? And not all be go, 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 and then think about it when it comes. It's like, you know, we love fucking WhatsApp groups and group chats. Maybe we need a group chat where it's just about experiences. It's not about making money. It's just about like things that we want to do. We want to meet somewhere or something. Like just, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
I'm laughing because I had a visual. Like
that,
for me,
that chat would go fucking south pretty quick. I can tell you.
No. Like I'm laughing because with me, it's so true, Mark, right? Like you look forward to like, you don't even think about it. And then the day before, right, you're packing last minute. You're at the point where you're literally shaving your body in the airport with your fucking Manscaped razor. That's how last minute, like, we are. Like you're not even thinking about it.
Remind me not to travel with you. That's weird.
No, but you know what I mean, right? Like, last minute, like, it's crazy.
It's funny because when you get onto the other side of that stuff, it's, yeah, there's other questions to be asked. You know, there's other questions to be asked. I found myself rolling out of the W and I pretty much booked a flight just like, okay, I'm going to go to Istanbul. So I just book a business flight. I go to, and I remember thinking, fuck, one, that was my initial goal, was like being able to go anywhere in the world at a moment's notice, buy whatever I need.
You said that. You literally said that 6-7 months ago on the pod. That's freedom to you. And you're doing it right now.
And I'm doing it. I got off the airport in Istanbul, and the Istanbul airport is insane now. I don't know if you've been to the new Istanbul air. I've never seen anything like it. But I went there and I had the Salt Bay guy, you know, with his salt and his steak and everything. And you get off business class, you go have, you know, a $200 lunch on your own with him, you know, and you just don't feel anything. And you get all this fucking designer shit in the airport. And I'm like, I just want a chicken sandwich. And I'm pissed off that it was $26 for a chicken sandwich. And you're just like, when you can buy any of that stuff and you don't care for any of it, it's just like, fuck, like it's really interesting. You go to the best hotel, it doesn't even matter. Like it's a very interesting time to go through.
On one point there, like I think Eric brought it up a couple of weeks ago on the pod about being involved with things, but with other people as well. And you know, that's certainly
this is the highlight for me. You guys,
yeah. Well, I mean, as an example, we're doing the development together. It'd be pretty boring, and I frankly probably wouldn't be enjoying doing it if I wasn't doing Eric. We speak most days. We're strategizing, bouncing stuff with each other. It's project based. It'll end. We'll probably find another one. Just being involved with people, and at that, like, just sort of going back 2 steps to be a retire of Bitcoin, tax free forever. I still want to do projects because it's
still got to be involved.
Connected.
You've got to be connected to your mates. And right now, if I didn't have my mates, I'd be in a very bad place. But it's really important that you got good mates and you get rid of the ones that aren't good mates.
I was when I was going through all my anxiety and shit, like 18 months, 2 years ago, whenever it was, I had a lot of people kind of trying to help me through that. And one place that I landed is that two of the things that it comes down to are community and shared mission. And that's why I said yes to doing the podcast, even though I thought that I was going to get there and have a panic attack. I said yes, because one of the things that I knew that I needed in my life was a new community and a shared mission. And, you know, this is not monetary for me, and it's not going to be monetary for you boys for fucking quite some time either. But you do it because of that community and shared mission. And so I think we always, no matter what level that we get to, we have to be investing in that continuously, I think. Otherwise,
And I think that's what's landing. Like, all you guys listening to this, we read all the comments and we appreciate every one of them, except for the dickheads who are following us. You can all fuck off. But everybody else.
All the commies.
For the most part, our audience is amazing. And I see, you know, younger guys who are doing this stuff, and we saw it this week with a, you know, a YouTuber and coming out and announcing, you know, they're hitting these big numbers on YouTube. And I know, and or you guys know, that it's all bullshit when you see it come out. I think that's, you know, it's a real disservice to themselves, because, you know, the greatest thing we've got going here is a genuine friendship and a genuine connection with our audience. And that was so proven for me, like doing that freedom event, you know, that we've got coming up. seeing $120,000 get raised, you know, for charity in a few days was just unbelievable to me, you know, and it just speaks to just the real connection we have with you guys that are listening, that you're willing to invest in your education and community and be part of it. And we want to do more of these events going forward. And it's just so lovely and such a privilege to be able to do something like that and raise so much money and affect so many lives. And that has given me a green candle in the last couple of weeks, is just being able to do something really meaningful, because 99% of my experience on social media is, you know, is just dog shit. And then the other 1% was that's probably not true. It's probably sort of 50-50, but I'm such a sensitive person that it feels like it's 99% dog shit, but I get a lot of love as well. But the green candles there that come in with that meaningful work are really, really good. So I just thank the community for that. And
that's your wheelhouse, Adam, right? Like you just, all right, I want to put on an event, it's going over 3 days. I'm going to organize it. I'm going to reach out. Like, to you, it's like so natural to do instant. Like just bam, yeah, I'll do it. Okay, landing page, boom. All right, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. Okay, call 50 different people. Yeah, okay, preempt. Like, it's your wheelhouse. Like, you make it look so easy. You know, like being new to the kind of event space, we got a couple events coming up shortly for the business clients and property clients. Like, it's a lot of work, man. It's what people don't see. You know, there's a lot of work in behind the scenes. And I take my hat off to you with some of the events that you've put on over you know, your life over time, you know, especially through Reliable and stuff like that. Different level of respect when it comes to putting an event together of that magnitude. But again, it's your wheelhouse, right? Like,
it's what changed my life and all of our lives is, you know, getting in these group environments and so on.
Yeah.
Because we've got to bring it to an end. It went a little bit long. That was a really different pod today. Hopefully, guys, if you're listening to this still at this point, drop a comment. Let us know what you thought. Did you like the direction of today's pod for something different? We didn't plan this, as you probably know. It just sort of takes on its own little journey. And we'll go from there. But thank you for listening, guys. Appreciate you. If you want to join us on the Freedom Summit, unemployable.com.au/freedom. And we'll see you next week on Unemployable.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.